It was Republican Day at the Illinois State Fair yesterday. Here's Governor Rauner.
They have outspent us 2-3, 4-1. A lot of legislators said, not this time. Not this time. That ain't happening. We are going toe-to-toe with them. In fact, we're going to do better than them.
Today's Democrat Day, we'll talk with our State House Bureau Chief Amanda Vinicky about how politics is playing out at the Illinois State Fair. Also, a Northwestern University law student talks to us about why he wants colleges to cancel classes on Election Day. And it's political corruption night tonight for the Kane County Cougars. But first, two experts share vegetable gardening tips.
We would be looking at things like tomatoes, watermelons, green beans. All of those really like warmth.
They're here to answer your questions. Call us at 1-800-222-9455. But first, the latest news. Welcome to the 21st. I'm Nyla Boodoo. As the summer begins to wind down, people across Illinois are trying to squeeze all they can out of their gardens. Vegetables are especially popular this time of year as we begin to transition this fall. That's why the first part of today's 21st show is going to be about vegetable and vegetable gardening. We've got some experts here to answer your questions. Any questions you have about vegetable gardening, we'll be taking them this first part of the hour. Our phone number is 1-800-222-9455. That's 1-800-222-9455. You can tweet to 21st Show, that's 21st Show, or you can post on our Facebook page. We're joined now by Elizabeth Wally and Nathan Johannon, who are both with the University of Illinois Extension. Elizabeth works in horticulture in Collinsville down near St. Louis. Nathan works with local food systems and small farms in Murfreesboro in southern Illinois. Thank you both for joining us.
Our pleasure.
Yeah, my pleasure as well.
Elizabeth, let's start with you. What kind of vegetables have you been growing recently?
Well, right now we're in all of the vegetables that just absolutely love the summer heat. So everyone should be picking things like tomatoes and probably their yard-long beans. A lot of the squash is coming on. Okra down my way. So if you think about anything, you know, that just makes you think of summer heat, we're probably picking it right now. So that would include the things like watermelons as well.
Nathan, what about you?
I would say a lot of the similar things. You know, we have all of our favorite, cucumbers, squash, and zucchini, and things of those sorts. And also we have, for those not may in the garden, been the orchards. It's easy to find some good peaches and even a few early apples also as well. So,
Okay. How has this summer been for growing vegetables? And I know that might be a difficult question depending on what part of the state we're in. But Elizabeth, let's start with you in terms of the weather and rain. How have things gone?
Well, you are exactly right. It really kind of depends on where you're at. If you're asking Nathan and I, we've had an extreme amount of rain, and so it's been very frustrating for a lot of the gardeners that they've had plants that are standing in water, and so some of them might not have had the best results. But in that regard, we've had a lot of high temperatures, too, so we've seen some issues with blossoms dropping off of green bean plants and tomato plants. But we've kind of evened out now, and things are starting to look a little bit better. So tomatoes are starting to ripen up really nice. So I would say that this is a year that some of us have had more rain than we want, and night temperatures a little bit higher than we want the best growing year.
Nathan, that said, when do you know when's a good time to stop trying to grow things and start to harvest? What should you be looking at for now, this time of year in August?
For this time, of course, many of our fruits and vegetables are, approaching maturity. You know, we're getting, should be well underway, red tomatoes and getting, peppers and other things of those sorts. A lot of times we all, as gardeners, like to kind of have our plants hang on as long as possible, so we try to harvest them kind of to the bitter end. A lot of times we'll take some things to frost if we can. One thing that we've seen a lot of, and anyone that's had a lot of rainfall or grown tomatoes in the past, we have a lot of early blight and other diseases on the leaves. So where growers see, their homeowner has that tomato plant where all those bottom leaves start to turn brown and that plant kind of slowly dies, that's often is early blight or some other bacterial diseases that come in, and that can really limit the overall productivity of those plants. A lot of times we get some early harvest, but this time of year some of those diseases can really be kind of problematic, and at certain points sometimes it's almost the time to maybe walk away from those plants and even consider maybe planting some things for the fall.
Our phone number is 1-800-222-9455. That's 1-800-222-9455. Nathan, you were just talking about tomatoes. Howard on the line from Griggsville, Illinois. Griggsville is about an hour south of Springfield, Howard?
It's supposedly west.
West of Springfield. Okay. You had a question about tomato plants.
Well, we have 12 tomato plants, and we've put a can a lot of tomatoes and pasta sauce and what have you. And we got a good first crop off of them, and about that time we got a lot of rain there for a couple-week period. And now we've pretty much consumed all the tomatoes that's on the plants, but I'm having a problem. There is no blooms coming back on the plants, and these plants that we planted are the variety that's supposed to produce all the way till first frost. And I don't. And the plants have got decent color to them, good color. I don't know whether I've sprayed them with a liquid fertilizer, but it doesn't seem to be improving any. I wonder what I need to do.
Yeah, Howard, hold on the line for a minute. Nathan might have a follow-up question for you. Nathan, I'm going to ask you to take this one because you were just talking about tomato plants.
Sure.
Any advice for Howard?
I would say to start off with, you know, even some of our tomato plants, even what we call the indeterminate types that do flower, you know, longer throughout the season, do tend to have a kind of a heat of production, and then they kind of taper off as we get down later in the season. Also, as Elizabeth mentioned, having some of our warm temperatures we've had can cause basically some of the blossoms to drop off due to some stress conditions. Also, excessive water can also cause basically some of those stress reactions where they'll try to basically lose some of those potential fruits because those fruit is a great load on the plant. So those are a few things offhand. Elizabeth, do you have any other thoughts that come to mind?
I'm in total agreement with you. I think it's just a combination of our unfavorable conditions being late at the year that has just put the plant in a position that it's not, you know, doing its optimal production as you would normally expect it to be.
Our phone number is 1-800-222-9455. You can tweet to 21st Show. You can post on our Facebook page. We will get to some of those Facebook questions a little bit later. But I wanted to ask, Elizabeth, as we're thinking about this, it's always kind of tough to get the point of where you need to kind of cut your losses, right? And Nathan started to talk about that. I wonder what advice you have for people, especially this year, because it has been, in certain parts of the state, really tough on plants. When did you sort of decide to walk away? Do you have a kind of a moment of truth?
Well, it's kind of dependent on every situation and every plant. You know, there are some people that, you know, you have that zucchini plant where you've gotten several zucchinis and then all of a sudden it just starts kind of wilting and dying away. And, you know, we have both stem borers and bacterial diseases that can cause a plant to decline. And on a case like that, the minute the plant starts wilting away, my suggestion is if you know it's clear that it has sufficient water and it's in nice sunshine and it just is wilting away, it's time to just cut the plant away and remove that debris, and possibly if you have enough time, you know, put something in for your fall garden. So I'm never one to, you know, suffer a plant that is just miserably there and not giving you any returns on that. It's always hard to, I think most of us have an issue with not only thinning plants early in the season, but we also have a hard time terminating them too when it's obvious that the end of their life is there and they're no longer producing.
Elizabeth, Nathan started talking about this. You mentioned it a little too. What are sort of the biggest culprits we need to look out for in terms of diseases or other invasive pests, particularly when we're thinking about vegetables in this time of year?
Well, when we're talking about vegetables this time, I'm going to, you know, Nathan and I can touch on some of the insects and diseases. But one of the other things that we're seeing quite a bit this year, and it's not just where Nathan and I are, but there's actually quite a bit of predation going on from mammals and birds coming in. So deer coming in and working over anything that's leafy in stage, ripping out entire plants, kind of stamping on watermelons, squirrels, chipmunks, raccoons, all of those.
Rabbits.
And rabbits. Can do quite a bit of damage in the garden, and they seem to be quite strong right at this time of the year when things are ripening. And so I would recommend to gardeners that you keep in mind the need for low fencing for some of the lowers, and when we're dealing with things like squirrels, they have to be enclosed completely to keep them out. And deer are just kind of a challenge in general if you're not able to have fencing to keep those out. But when we're talking about disease and insects, we have the perfect conditions right now for disease development. The days are still warm, nights are still warm, and we have a lot of moisture now. Everyone goes out to their car and has to turn on their windshield wipers because there's dew on the window now. And so that surface moisture on the plants is very conducive to disease. So for those that have gardens, they should be monitoring their garden quite regularly for any signs of disease. Small outbreaks, you can remove the leaves. If it looks like it's more serious, you might need to turn to using fungicide sprays on your garden. And we also have insect pests, too, that everyone's familiar with. With tomatoes, you might see damage. We have an insect that we change its name depending on what crop it's on. So for those who grow sweet corn and they know it as the corn earworm, we have that pest. And when it is the exact same insect pest on tomatoes, we call it a tomato fruit worm. And though we're not talking about cotton, when it's in cotton, we call it the cotton bollworm. And so, again, you know, there's a decision with gardeners on how much tolerance they have of an insect. You know, for a corn earworm, some people are perfectly okay with just cutting the tip of the corn off. And other people, that's unacceptable. And they might want to actually turn to some sort of insecticide control measure for those pests. So we leave it up to the gardeners, but many of the pests that we have don't have toxic properties to them and can be cut away if a good portion of the fruit is still usable.
That's Elizabeth Wally with the University of Illinois Extension. Nathan Johannan's also on the line with us, and we're talking about vegetables in particular. If you have questions about fall gardening, we're going to get to that in a minute. Any questions about vegetables, our phone number is 1-800-222-9455. You can tweet to 21st Show. You can post on our Facebook page. Nathan, I wanted to ask you something Elizabeth was talking about, animals, pests, deer, squirrels. When Elizabeth was saying full enclosure, what do you recommend people use for full enclosure if they're trying to really keep everything out of their vegetables?
For full enclosure, it can be a challenge for many of our crops. One example that I've actually personally used a full enclosure on is getting some netting, say, over some berries or things, especially blueberry bushes, using like making some kind of a hoop structure and getting actually a netting meant for you know, animal exclusion to completely cover, say, a blueberry bush, or sometimes we use it on other fruit crops like that. It can be obviously challenging to enclose, say, a whole garden space if we're getting squirrels and tomatoes and things like that. But that's one example you can use. I've used PVC pipe or sometimes even plastic electrical conduit to make a hoop, and then you can use this mesh netting to kind of drape over to help keep things like birds and squirrels and things out.
Mm. You mentioned berries. I wanted to ask both of you, I know that there's lots of melons and berries that are only in season this time of year. What kind of vegetables are you looking at unique to this time of year in Illinois? Elizabeth?
Unique to, well.
Or maybe if not unique, what you think is best right now.
Yeah, I think, Illinois is a number one pumpkin producer in the nation. So people are starting to see their pumpkin sizing getting ready for the Halloween, you know, holiday season coming on. And so Illinois is really known for that as well. And where Nathan and I, particularly where I'm located, it's starting to get, we're coming into the horseradish harvesting season too. So there are a lot of homeowners that have horseradish in their yard, so they should notice that their plants are have very good hype to them and a lot of leaf development, and it's getting close to when they can start digging horseradish and grinding that root and turning it into different sauces and stabilizing it that way. So those are probably two of the most well-known crops that are strongly grown not only in the home garden but commercially as well.
Nathan, when we're thinking about melons and berries, what are your favorites this time of year?
I would say right now here in August, certainly watermelons. Watermelons and cantaloupe are can be found around at some local markets, and many homeowners have some in their yards. I actually have part of a very tasty watermelon at home in the refrigerator that I've been enjoying. So that's one of the things, especially in this part of the season, seems to be fairly common. Cucumbers, bell peppers, and things as well are also usually in full swing, and so that's some goodies. In addition to some of our good peaches and apples will be coming soon. So,
can you settle a dispute for us about, Nathan, whether watermelons are fruits or vegetables?
I will say that botanically speaking, they are a fruit. They do have seeds in them, and they are a fruit by nature. Although oftentimes we do kind of lump them into, at least as far as our commercial growers, kind of throw more in the vegetable categories, and we can include them with some of their related crops, which are, they're in the same family as things like zucchini and cucumbers and pumpkins and winter squash and things like that. So, but technically it is a fruit by nature that you are consuming. So,
okay, we're going to take a break. When we come back, we're going to continue this conversation with Nathan and Elizabeth. We're going to continue to take your questions as well. Our phone number is 1-800-222-9455 as we're talking about vegetables in particular and gardening here on the 21st. Stay tuned. We'll continue this conversation in just a minute or two. Thanks for tuning into the 21st. I'm Nyla Boodoo. By the way, you can always find out all the information how to contact us at our website. That's www.21stshow.org. There you'll find past shows, feedback for us, our hotline number, all of the information at 21stshow.org. We're talking about summer vegetable gardening, what you're harvesting right now, fall gardening as well, with Elizabeth Wally. She's with the University of Illinois Extension. Her U of I Extension colleague, Nathan Johannan, is also on the line. Elizabeth's on the line from Collinsville. Nathan's in Murfreesboro. You can join us as well. Our phone number is 1-800-222-9455. Again, that's 1-800-222-9455. Elizabeth or Nathan, I don't know which one of you want to take this. We got this question from Elaine on Facebook, and Elaine says, every year we raise onions and we have a hard time keeping them. A lot will be soft and mushy when we pull them, or they spoil from the inside out. We've tried plants and sets. We don't harvest until the tops are over and start to dry. We let them rest in the sun until the roots are dried and break them off. We've tried pulling soil over them or just leaving them to do their own thing. Any suggestions? Who wants to take that one?
Nathan, you want to go?
Sure. I would say first thought, and Elizabeth, feel free to chime in if you have other thoughts. First thing is with many of our onions, some will keep a little better naturally than others. I know I've seen issues where we'll have them where they really don't keep at all, as if for some reason the soil gets really wet, say the tops are mostly dyed down, and then for some reason we get a big rain or get very wet soils, which have happened, especially if you got into that July time frame, at least for many in this part of the state. It seems like they don't fare very well and can get some secondary diseases and rot-type organisms that will get a hold in there if they're, more or less mature but still sitting out in the soil. I've seen similar things even with garlic as well.
Yeah, I'm kind of in agreement. Usually, one of the key things with onions at harvest is how well they are dried down during harvest. And if we have wet conditions during harvest, that just seems to reduce their shelf life. And so usually one of the things that we'll talk about is to pull the plants in the morning and allow them to air dry as best we can in the, you know, late afternoon so that they can dry that way. And then kind of put them, you know, in a place where they're really, you know, in a dry shelter where they can almost hang. If you've ever seen onions or garlic, you know, that have been braided for hanging, again, that whole idea is for really good air circulation and try to get them dried down so that there's not, you know, environmental conditions so that bacteria and fungi can develop in there. So Nathan and I are on the same page with, you know, conditions for getting them dried down. That doesn't mean that, you know, they haven't already been infected possibly with, you know, something in the garden, and that's definitely a possibility that they have something in their garden. But barring that, I would just look at, you know, trying to harvest them during a really good drying condition and do that curing event where they're, you know, hanging, either laying on screens or hanging so that they can really dry down before they're packed and put into storage.
Elizabeth, how long would that take typically for drying?
Well, usually you're going to want to do it, you know, for, you know, maybe a week or so, so that before, you know, that you put them in bags or dry them or something. So just so that they're just really, really dried down before they're put into storage. Because once, you know, it's that one bad apple type of deal. Once one starts rotting and they're in close quarters with each other, it just moves from one to the next.
Mm-hmm. We've talked about horseradish. We've talked about onions. Nathan, are there specific dishes or meals people can make this time of year that you really enjoy that are maybe they can make other times of the year but are going to be the best and most fresh right now?
I would say my favorite thing personally maybe isn't a certain dish, but it's having all these wonderful fruits and vegetables to have as sides and other additions. I've been enjoying some fresh sweet corn I've had at home from the garden. That's been a real treat to have with supper. I already mentioned I had a watermelon. That's probably two of my many favorites. So I just enjoy having that fresh slice of tomato and a nice hamburger. I mean, for me, I think there's a lot of, I just like a lot of those vegetables, even just by themselves, is just as add-ons that, you know, you just don't get in other months of the year to have those kind of fresh out of the field treats. So
Nathan mentioned tomato and corn. Elizabeth, what about you?
Well, we're particularly in our household right now enjoying making BLTs with both, you know, lettuce coming out of the leaf, lettuce coming out of the garden, and tomatoes. So that's all really good. And pickling lots of different things like okra and, you know, any of the cucumbers, things like that. So pickling is a big thing right now.
Elizabeth, for pickling basics for people who've never attempted that before, what's a good resource for starting?
You know, University of Georgia has online for home canning that is just wonderful. Maybe while we're sitting here, I'll see if I can pull up the
website. If our producers can look for that too. So University of Georgia has some specific tips for home canning.
Yeah, they are the go-to source for all canning, and they really put out good information that's reliable for safe canning.
All right, we're looking for that, and we'll tweet that out if you follow 21st Show. Our phone number is 1-800-222-9455. You can tweet to 21st Show, as we said, as well. I wanted to ask both of you, I know Illinois Extension, actually, I want to get to fall gardening in a minute, but before we get to that, Illinois Extension encourages entering your vegetables into competitions and exhibits. Nathan, can you tell us what kind of competitions are out there?
There's various places, a lot of which have to do with some of our local state fair, our local fairs, along with the state fair. We are, of course, in the midst of the Illinois State Fair in Springfield, so that's certainly one opportunity. There's always a very nice display of various fruits and vegetables from all around the state. Many county fairs, if they haven't happened already, many of them do have opportunities for entering vegetables. And I believe also the down in the southern part of the state here, we have the DeCoin State Fair, which is coming up here the end of August and first part of September, which is another opportunity. But a lot of our fairs and things are great opportunities to enter in some of your prized fruits and vegetables.
Elizabeth, are there any competitions or exhibits that are common outside of state or county fairs, or is it mostly state and county fair focused?
It's mostly the fair focus. There are some organizations that, you know, if we step away from vegetables, that are outside the organization for judging of lots of flowers and things like that. But off the top of my head, I don't know of one right now for vegetables. Most of those are going to be the fairs around the state.
Let's start talking about fall gardens for a moment here and fall vegetables. Again, our phone number is 1-800-222-9455. Nathan, I knew we started to talk about pumpkins. Where should you be at with pumpkin planting for the fall?
Well, usually our pumpkin planting, we usually like to have that done usually somewhere in the month of June is usually our typical time frame. So moving forward to now, what we would really like to see is we want to see some good fruit sets. So we want to see some of those female flowers, so the basically the nice bright yellow flowers where you can actually see a small immature fruit that's formed beneath that flower. That will then, in about a month or a little more, will turn into a ripe and mature fruit. So we actually like to see on a commercial side or even for a homeowner that wants to have some pumpkins out on their porch in September, we'd really like to see some maybe some green fruit, you know, starting to form and forming, so that way in another month, maybe month 40 days, that we have some fruit that we can start to use for decorations or those that like to start to get some, make some pie filling and other things with pumpkins.
Nathan, are you concerned about the rains that we've had? Is there anything to do to kind of protect these pumpkins from getting flooded out?
Unfortunately, you know, Mother Nature kind of is what it is, and there's not a huge amount that we can do to change things as far as what has already happened. You know, the rainfall, we can't change what amount of rain that we would happen to get. The biggest thing I always tell people is, you know, if you have a spot you're raising fruits and vegetables, you know, make sure you have at least decent surface drainage so it's not doesn't have a big low spot in the middle of it. Obviously, we can only do so much with given soil, and we have some soils will drain water a lot better than others. But we want to try to do our best to make sure that we're not getting excessive water in that area, which can be just fine on a dry summer, but with having some rainfall like we've had in the last even month, especially in the last week, that can be very problematic. So,
Elizabeth, let's talk about fall gardens. What are you typically, is it too late to start? I know sometimes a lot of people forget to plan for a fall garden. When's the best time to start planning for fall?
Well, usually, and it depends on where you're in the state. So usually when we talk about fall gardens, if I start at the northern part of the state, we would usually start talking about, and when I say the northern part, my line is anything above Interstate 80.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, like that first week of June, that's when we would tell the northern part of the state that they could put out crops like Brussels sprouts, cabbage, collard, kale, you know, those plants that you planted very early in the spring. And so that would be for the northern part. That same period in central Illinois would be all right as well. And we would usually push that back a little bit later for the southern part because it's still a little bit, you know, warm there. But if we jump to this time, now we're starting to get to a time where we have to be considering when is the frost date for all of our areas, because there are some crops that if you plant and they get frost, they won't survive. For example, sweet corn, if you were to plant it and get frosted too heavily, it could kill it. So if we're looking for this area right now, so being today's date, we look at that. Northern Illinois, we would probably say at this time that it was safe to grow, still plant things like leaf lettuce, mustard greens, still radishes and spinach. So, you know, a lot of the things that are going to be like the leaf salad lettuces, things like that for the northern part of the state. As we move to more of the central part of the state and the southern part of the state, we can add a couple of other things. We can still have time probably for things like kohlrabi, Chinese cabbage, turnips, and probably some of the cost lettuces. Those are the semi-head-producing for the central part and the southern part. We could probably still get those if we were to initiate them now.
You're saying now. So there is still time to actually plant a few things now for central and southern Illinois.
Yes. And I've noticed that going around garden centers, that the garden centers are starting to actually make transplants available for fall gardens. So if you check your local garden centers, you might get a jump on things by buying some transplants and, you know, take that 10 to 20 days you usually lose, you know, from seeding to getting it up to that transplant size. So check out your local garden centers. You might be able to even get something else in.
Nathan, for someone who maybe wants to start aspiring gardening, vegetable gardening, and maybe wants to do that, go to a gardening center, get some transplants. What's your best advice for someone who's never done this before, but walks into a garden center and picks up a couple, maybe say leaf lettuces, and wants to try their hand at growing that?
I think especially specifically for fall gardening, as Elizabeth mentioned, kind of some of our timeline, you know, I think especially for the lettuce, radishes, and spinach, we still have time. So someone getting into that, you know, if we're wet like we are down here, let things dry out and go ahead and prepare, you know, prepare a small area for your plants, get them out, make sure you provide some nutrients to them, maybe some compost or some starter fertilizer to help kind of get them off to a good start. Other than that, you know, the biggest thing some summers will have is trying to keep things watered and moist. We'll see how our weather pattern shifts, if we will get maybe a break from some of our excessively warm temperatures and see how the moisture goes. Overall, this summer we've had for the most part, had a decent amount of moisture, especially in the last month or so. But the biggest thing is you want to make sure you get those plants off to a good start, and do keep in mind that you know, depending on where you're at in the state, whether it be from closer to early October to mid October when we have our first frost on average. Of course, that yet remains to be seen how soon that first frost will come. And to keep that in mind, knowing we need to plant, you know, now, so that way we have plenty of time for that crop to mature ahead of any potential cold weather.
Nathan, I wanted to ask you, when the soil's dry, I know heads on in the broccoli tend to be small. Does that mean that we're going to have broccoli in good shape for this fall because of the rain that we've had?
Overall, I think obviously the moisture, and especially if our temperatures would moderate a little bit, that would be ideal for some of our fall broccoli and other cold crops in the similar family. I think it's a little early to tell exactly what will happen. Certainly, we still have plenty of opportunities for some warm days in the 90s and especially in August and even throughout, you know, even a chance through most of September. But good moisture is really crucial for some of these crops. I would say even more so than some of our temperature issues, because they need, especially as the temperature goes up, those plants need more and more water to be able to take up to keep them growing actively.
Last question for both of you. What's the easiest vegetables to that you think beginners should start to plant with? Elizabeth?
Radishes.
Okay. Nathan?
That's pretty straightforward.
I would say radishes are very simple. And, you know, I would say the next after that, you know, some of the lettuce and things can also be fairly simple to get started. But radishes, they're fairly quick and definitely pretty simple to grow. So.
Thanks very much for that. Nathan Johannan is with the University of Illinois Extension. He focuses on local food systems and small farms. Elizabeth Wally, also with U of I. Thank you so much, both of you, for joining us.
Quite welcome.
Yep, you're quite welcome.
Stay tuned. You're listening to The 21st. Thank you. Thanks for tuning in to the 21st. I'm Nyla Boodoo. Many countries, whether that's Spain, Singapore, or New Zealand, have election days over the weekend, the idea being that makes it easier for everyone to vote. Of course, here, our biggest election day is on Tuesday, and Illinois workers are legally entitled to 2 hours off to vote. But because it's not a national holiday, classes continue at campuses all across the state, which can keep students, faculty, and staff away from the polls. One Northwestern University law student is trying to change that. Beau Tremeteer is editor-in-chief of Northwestern University's Law Review. He's also co-chair of the Election Rave Campaign. That's a nonpartisan group that promotes electoral participation and civic education in law schools. He wrote an op-ed that was published in the Springfield State Journal Register this week asking Governor Rauner to mandate that law schools in Illinois cancel classes on Election Day to allow students and faculty to be able to vote and volunteer at election sites. Beau joins us on the phone now. Hey, Beau, welcome to the 21st.
Hey, thanks for having me.
What inspired you to get involved with this campaign, Beau?
So in 2014, my first year of law school, I realized that tons of my classmates and professors just frankly didn't have an opportunity to get away on Election Day itself, and only a small handful of us skipped class to volunteer. It was clear to me that that was a big problem.
Why do you think it's important, particularly, that law school students and faculty have time to be involved in elections?
I think it's important that everyone has an opportunity, but frankly, law schools are the lowest hanging fruit. They're institutions that spend every single day talking about democracy, talking about the rule of law, and it's incredibly important that those sorts of institutions provide people an actual opportunity to participate in those. It seems a little silly to me that students and professors sit in a classroom on this, in November 8th this year, talking about democracy when it's actually happening in the streets outside.
And I imagine you're not just talking about voter participation, but are you also talking then about the ability to serve as election observers or those sorts of things, lots of volunteers that are needed at polling places on Election Day? And it seems like a lot of those things are actually done by lawyers or law students.
They are, but the need is so great. I can tell you anecdotally, just from my experience in 2014, and I know I'm just the one out of many people who spent time all around Chicago and throughout Illinois, you'd see these long lines formed because poll judges were trying really hard to do a good job, but the technology is confusing, and a lot of them haven't had a lot of training, and there weren't enough people there to help out. So the need is enormous for volunteers, for poll judges. We're encouraging our students at Northwestern and our faculty to find the opportunity that makes the most sense for them. If they want to go be an election monitor, that's wonderful. If they want to be a poll judge, that's great. We're going to be taking all of the money that people earn being poll judges and donate that to charity focused on increasing electoral participation.
That said, I can't help but think about the automatic voter registration bill that Governor Rauner vetoed on Friday. Do you have a personal opinion on that bill, or does Rave have an opinion on that automatic voter registration movement in Illinois?
No, we don't take positions on specific legislation. Our position is that increasing access to voting, lawful voting, is good for everyone. And that's why we thought it was important that we try and find a way to bring together the governor and members of the legislature to take concrete steps to help people have access. Hopefully, the governor and members of the state legislature will find a way to do that. Our proposal is just one of many steps that could take us in the right direction.
Beau, you all were able to get Northwestern University's law school to cancel class on Election Day. Was that a tough thing to do?
Fortunately, no. Our administration was incredibly receptive. We had about a third of the student body sign on to a petition, and a few student leaders sat down with the dean and pitched the idea, and he was immediately excited about it and worked days after to start implementing it. And so this can be done. I think a lot of students and faculty may be wary of pushing their administrations to make what might seem to be a big change, but I think people will be pleasantly surprised. If our dean is any indication, I think schools could really do this if they put in the effort.
And do you have any plans to expand this campaign to include all colleges and universities across Illinois, all undergraduate and graduate classes?
We would eagerly welcome that. we're focusing on law schools because, as I said, I think they're the lowest hanging fruit. I think they have, frankly, an affirmative duty to do something like this. I think it's increasing access to opportunities to volunteer and to vote at all schools is important. I think law schools need to lead the way, and if they do so, I think the colleges will follow suit.
Mm-hmm. Since you've written that op-ed, have you gotten any feedback? What are you hearing right now in terms of working with other schools or at least trying to get the movement at law schools throughout Illinois to cancel classes?
Some encouraging feedback. I think that this conversation is happening at many of the law schools around the state, and I think I'm keeping my fingers crossed that we'll see some progress in the next couple of weeks. I think it's an idea that a lot of people will say as soon as they hear it, wow, that makes a lot of sense. I can't believe this isn't what we're doing already. And so it's just that actual action, those boots on the ground needed in law schools to show administrations that this matters, that it's achievable, and that it'll have a real impact.
But one last question for you. I think certainly no one is going to argue about voter turnout in this country being low and voter participation being low, especially when you look at other countries. But there isn't necessarily a lot of research that shows that having time off on Election Day would actually help improve turnout. How do you respond to that?
I think that what it does is it sends a message. It sends a message that voting matters, that Election Day matters. Right now, when everyone has work and class and these other obligations, it sends a message that it's okay. If you don't have time to get to the polls, it's not a problem. And I think that feeds into apathy about electoral participation and frustration among millions of Americans about not having a voice. If we were to stand up and say Election Day is special, this is one day a year when we all, every other year, where we come together and choose how we lead ourselves, I think that's an incredibly powerful message that would resonate with voters, and I think you would see that reflected in increased turnout in a dynamic way that couldn't be captured by data so far.
That's Bo Tremeteer. He's a law student, editor-in-chief of the Northwestern University Law Review, co-chair of the Election Rave campaign. Bo, thanks for taking the time to talk to us.
Thanks for having me.
Speaking of voter registration, there's another way one group in Illinois is trying to encourage people to vote. The minor league baseball team, the Kane County Tigers, is getting in on some fun this week. The Arizona Diamondbacks Single A team is hosting what it's calling Illinois Political Corruption Night. That's tonight. And while it's to poke fun at our unfortunate, if deserved, reputation for corruption, it's also a way to raise awareness about voting. Here to talk to us now about the idea is Julie Brady, a promotions assistant with the Kane County Cougars organization. Julie, thanks for joining us.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
How did the Cougars come up with this idea?
It was actually first floated around in our staff meetings last October when we start planning for the next season. So at first we were like, oh, haha, that's a funny idea. Then we kind of sat down and we're like, maybe we could actually, use this in a productive, kind of cool way.
So there's a nice alliteration with Cougars and corruption, right? So the Kane County Cougars are having political corruption night. What exactly is going to be taking place at the game tonight, Julie?
So we're just going to try to be, it's not that corruption is funny inherently. Obviously, the legacy of political corruption in Chicago and Illinois in general is terrible and bad and has done many negative things. But it is pretty easy to make fun of without condoning. So we are going to, set up fake iPass systems. We're going to, play games about the four of the last seven governors being in jail. Paul Dehling, who's a journalist doing a Chicago corruption walking tour, is going to throw out the first pitch. He's going to give us a little information about, some of the more serious corruption issues that we've been having. We're just trying to raise awareness. Kind of the whole point of the thing is to not be okay with the night so that we don't have to do it next year. If you want to change it, we have voter registration booths set up behind Section 109. Go out and institute change yourself.
Yeah, I want to ask you a little bit about that in a minute. But I know the Chicago Tribune wrote an editorial and they had some other ideas for things mm-hmm. they would do if they were on your promotional staff, like putting friends of the team owners in fielding positions during
the
game or raising ticket prices and making them really high, asking the crowd, will the defendants please rise before the national anthem? Were these mm-hmm. what kind of ideas did you guys decide not to do?
Oh, well, a lot of the stuff that's in that article, actually. The thing is, we are still a major league affiliated minor league baseball team, and we are, very family friendly. So we don't want to make it, too edgy of a night. We don't want to, there's some things that we can't do, just like, you know, auctioning off who wants to be the pitcher tonight. You know, it can't just be anything like that. So we do
because
have
they might end up on the Diamondbacks.
Yeah, right. They might need some help. Yeah. So we just had to stay within the limits of, you know, what we're actually able to do.
What kind of reaction are you getting from the public about this? Have you heard more feedback than you maybe have for other promotional nights for the Cougars?
Definitely. This has definitely been our biggest publicity theme night of the year. It seems to kind of be split between people that think it's great and awesome that we're, you know, drawing attention to this issue. And then there's some people that, you know, they think that it's not something to be made fun of and that we should, you know, keep politics out of baseball, which I understand. And I think that the voter registration booth is going to really help with that.
Right. And so let's talk about that for a minute. You said that you are going to have a table set up so people are going to actually be able to register to vote.
Yes, that is not part of the, like, actual corruption part of the night. That's part of the fighting corruption part of the night, the anti-political corruption night. So, yes, we'll be able to register to vote.
And where is that going to be so people know if they want to?
Yeah, it'll be located behind Section 109 in the ballpark, starting at 5:30.
Are you guys doing any giveaways? I know everybody always loves going to ball games for giveaway nights. Are there any corruption-themed giveaways that are happening this evening? Or is that maybe not inherent with the theme of... to give you something
for free. We're having two giveaways tonight, actually. The one is not corruption related. It's a can koozie giveaway by Miller Lite, which is actually a very cute can koozie. It's like a little Cougar's treaty. But we're also giving away pins at the gates. One of them is an Illinois pin and one is a Wisconsin pin. And people coming through the gates will have to choose which state they think is most reputable by voting with their pins. So we'll have the results on the board during the game.
Well, let's hope everybody picks Illinois for that, right, Julie? I wanted to ask you, I know theme promotional nights, just as you being the promotions assistant for the Cougars, that's become a big thing for minor league baseball and hockey teams. I know you've how many people come out after hearing about your promotions?
It depending on like the specific promotion, but we definitely get bigger crowds on those nights. People scrolling down our promo schedule on the website, you know, it really stands out. Oh, you know, Princess and Pirates night or Minions night. We just had a crowd last weekend on Saturday of over 10,000 for Minions night, just because, you know, minor league baseball is such a good family entertainment facility, and when you tie that in to
with Minions,
are,
of course, everybody wants to come. Sure.
Exactly.
What other promotions are you guys doing for the rest of the year?
We're kind of winding down on the season right now. We have a couple more homestands left after it ends tonight. We do have Ghostbusters night coming up next homestand, and we do have a Pokemon Go night because, you know, we got to jump on that boat while it's still here. We're also having a Star Wars 3D night in our last homestand in September.
And remind us again, Julie, can you give us details of the game tonight, how much ticket prices are?
Ticket prices, it is $13 for reserved seats. It's $15 for box seats. And then on the lawn, it is $9.
Julie Brady is the promotions assistant with the Kane County Cougars, talking to us about Illinois political corruption night tonight. Julie, did you get politicians who said they didn't want to come to the game tonight, maybe because you're doing this promotion?
Yes, we did. We reached out to a few.
And did anyone say yes?
Like, hey, you're corrupt. No one did.
Right.
That's surprising.
Okay, so just ball players, families, and fans at the game tonight.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. All right, Julie, thanks for being with us. King County Cougars.
Yeah, thanks so much for having me.
All right. That does it for us today on the 21st. You can always find past shows on the NPR One app if you search for the 21st. We're also available on iTunes and Android. All of those links and every other way to contact us, whether that's phone, email, or social media, that's all at our website at www.21stshow.org. Tomorrow, we're going to be talking about Olympic ads, also the text to 911 service, where that's available in Illinois and where it isn't. Again, that's instead of calling 911, texting to 911. So that's coming up tomorrow on the 21st. We're produced by Christine Herman, Sean Newman, and Philip Kisabika, with assistance from Ben Thomas Payne. Technical direction and engineering today comes from Steve Mork. Scott Cameron is our news director. Thanks to Joe Yoon and Nick Vance from the University of Illinois Social Media Analytics Lab for their research help. And very special thanks to the band Public Access for our theme music. I'm Nyla Boodoo. The 21st is a production of Illinois Public Media. Thanks for listening. Have a great day.